This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. No idea what we are going to talk about this evening, what the main topic of conversation is going to be, as Sunderland don't get the new manager bounce they're looking for. They get whatever it is they try to bounce has crashed through the floor. I should have scripted that and come up with something better, but I tried to make it up. I tried to make it up on the spot and it didn't quite work.
Yeah, you're not Peter Drury, are you?
I was going to say, let's be honest, let's not make out like that isn't scripted, the stuff he does.
Oh, God. He pretends it isn't.
Yeah, I should have done
wins
that.
It just
popped into my head there, like as I was doing it. I was like, oh, there's got to be like an analogy about not getting a new manager bounce and like a ball crashing through the floorboards or something, but I didn't. I couldn't just do it on the spot. Right. Anyway, we will talk about that. Jordan, myself, Stephen Gorsley, you just heard there. It's Gareth Farger. Evening.
Good day. I've got one for you. So the dead cat bounce hasn't even come because the cat has already had 9 lives. There you go. I haven't scripted.
Oh, didn't Chris didn't like that?
No. You didn't script that, did you, Gareth?
There you go.
Guys, we're going to apologise on Gareth's internet because I think it's lagging a little bit behind ours. So if it sounds like he's out of sync, we've already established before we start recording that he's having problems. So
it's storm. We're blaming it on Storm Isha.
Jocelyn. No,
we never used the name Storms. Never used the name Storms in this country. It's another. It's another Americanism that's. It's forced its way in, isn't it?
Yeah.
You should just say it was windy.
It is very windy.
Yeah, it's kind of windy outside, isn't it? Now they're like, now they're called storms and given names.
A lot of my garden furniture is in places it shouldn't be, which I haven't enjoyed.
But like Stephen's garden, it's not windy, to be fair.
I was waiting for it. Not that I'm just no offense, by the way. I'm not being offensive to any of American listeners because I was looking at the stats again last week and like 10% of our audience are based in America, which I always find really interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See you,
and Los Angeles in particular has the highest within America.
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Exactly.
Well, if anyone wants us to do a live show in Hollywood. Well, we're open to it.
Yeah.
Sunset Boulevard.
With New York a close second. So, well, actually, I think what I was, because I'm, I want to go to New York, actually. Never been to America yet. But it was like, I think it said New York and then it said Brooklyn underneath now, unless I'm mistaken. Isn't Brooklyn in New York?
Yeah, it's one of the
I mean, Hollywood tells me it is, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, you've got Manhattan, then you've got the Brooklyn Bridge, which takes you into Brooklyn. So it's across the water, right. But it's still part of New York.
Okay, well, I think collectively New York might be on top then because Brooklyn was listed separately in the stats for some reason. Anyway, digressing a lot here. But
I'm sure
hello,
there's a
everybody.
Guy.
Hello, everybody over there.
I was just going to say, I'm sure there's a guy who runs a bar in New York that's a Sunderland fan. Oh, he certainly used to. I remember going over there and someone saying, oh, you should go
We have met listeners from New York before. We have Elizabeth, shout out.
Elizabeth, hi, Elizabeth. very kindly offered her apartment to us and said, if you want to come and stay in New York, you can come and stay in our apartment. Isn't that kind? So thank you, Elizabeth, again. However, we can't afford to all come to New York because it costs thousands of
Well, maybe
pounds.
If this guy gives us free beer and then the offer of the free apartment on the table still, then, you know, we'll
just need
maybe
to find a pilot
maybe.
Who listens to the pod.
Yeah, a pilot, yeah. If you have a private jet, then please get in touch.
Yeah. And if you've got a taxi company, we could do the shuttle from the airport as well, all these little things.
Yeah.
We'll try and piece it all together. Right. Anyway. Try and stick to football, and that doesn't really work, does it? If you want some like instant match reaction from the defeat or from a Friday night against Hull, then go back and listen to the reaction pod where Eleanor and Mick give you their reaction in the pub afterwards. We're probably going to move it on a little bit from that, I think. And just where do we start?
Did you not enjoy it?
Do you know, like, right, so firstly, we did a Twitter poll, didn't we? Which, again, is not us trying to push out our narrative for anybody, that we just asked a question, because I can't remember a reaction like this to a manager ever. Well, I can't remember it because it's never happened in my lifetime. And yes, social media amplifies things. So the reason we put a poll out just to ask if Sunderland should get rid of the manager game wasn't even like, you know, our narrative or us pushing out anything. I was just interested because often the people who shout for this stuff, it's a vocal minority. So I just wondered, yeah. I wondered if that would be reflected in a poll. But 3,700 votes, which is, we normally get about 1,000 in those polls that we put out. And it was like 92%, I think, or 91%.
91 and a half ish. Yeah.
To see it bail out, which is incredible. I'm trying to like be, I keep telling myself here that I almost need to like offer balance a little bit or try and be the voice of reason and say that if we were looking at another club and their fan base turned this quickly, would we be saying, come on, don't be ridiculous. It's six league games, but there's little things when you dig deeper, isn't there? The style of player.
Yeah.
One thing. Chris,
well, I
tell
think...
us about tell us about the stat you came across today. People might have seen on socials.
Yeah, well, I don't know how I came across it because the guy who tweeted it blocked me, so I had to view it off the wires of the
state. It's a long list as well.
That doesn't really narrow it down. No, but the guy who runs StatsBomb, who was a very unfortunate person to be blocked by because they do some really interesting stuff.
Before you continue, how can you be blocked by somebody who runs a site about stats for football? How does that happen?
I can tell you the exact moment. Do you remember when, tragically, the first season in League One, when like Madger was banging them in and all the XG stuff was like, oh, some of them aren't actually that good. They're going to regress kind of thing. And he put that out and I said, well, does it take into account the fact that he's probably playing in a division he's too good for against goalkeepers who aren't as good as the average? And he didn't reply, but he kept arguing with other people. So I don't know, maybe I may have called him something, perhaps. I don't know. It was Friday night. And he then blocked me. And then somebody sent me his tweet the next day, which said, I blocked this guy for being a dick, but it's actually a good question. I was like, well, that's not really fair, is it? So, but yes, that's why I'm blocked from him. But no, what he put out, which I think actually, this was something I was going to see anyway, even before I'd seen it. I'm glad that the data backs it up. Is he basically put out that our XG4, so expected goals for, has pretty much fallen off a cliff since we hired Michael Beale. It did not drop in those couple of games under Mike Dodds. But what it also shows is that our XG against has fallen a little bit under Michael Beale compared to Tony Mowbray. Now, to my mind, that you can see that in the eye test. I think we do look less open, but what we've sacrificed in exchange is basically any sort of attacking intent or enjoyment. I mean, Friday night was just dour. I was on the way down to the game and I had said, like, I feel like we play a lot slower. And I think Friday was just that, like on steroids. It was just dull. And Yeah. So yes, yeah, so, I mean the data backs it up, really, that we're creating less. We are conceding fewer quality chances, but not by much. And the difference between how much we've dropped off on the attacking and how much we've improved in the defending is massively outweighing. So yeah, and I think, but I don't. I know people go, well, I can see that with my own eyes. It's just nice to have it backed up. But I think anyone can see that with their own eyes. It's we just don't look like scoring. Like, as soon, I don't know what you two were like, but as soon as they scored on Friday, I said to my dad, I went, well, that's it. That's game over. And he agreed, and everybody around us agreed, because we don't look like scoring.
I think what the thing's been bugging me now is we come on after the Newcastle game, and we talked about the players not being as brave on the ball as they could be. And I think we almost just put that down to nerves. I thought the players had bottled it, and the evidence since then suggests that it's instruction almost, because they're not being brave on the ball anymore. They're not trying to get 2-on. Like, under Mowbray, players would try and get 2-on-1 in any position possible. They would always try and double up on defenders, and they'll be brave, and there'll be little one-touch, two-touch football, but moving forward. And we kept a lot of the ball on Friday night, but I think Gareth's made a mention before about how it's almost like watching an under-23s game, and that's what it's like. Yeah. There's absolutely no... You know, people have had this ridiculous argument for ages saying, well, we could have Haaland in the team and we wouldn't be scoring goals, and I've always completely rubbished that. At the minute, that's the closest to that we've ever been. Because that was nonsense under a Mowbray team, because him, as discussed many times, the amount of times we actually cut the ball back in the box. But there was none of that. We're not getting in the box at all anywhere, and we're not getting anywhere near it.
Yeah, well, I think the thing about, like, obviously they constantly tell us that there's like a data-led approach and everything we do is led by data and that. But I mean, if that was the case, they wouldn't have sat Mowbray when they did, because although the results had dipped, underlying, we all talked about it, like, we were having chances, we just couldn't put them away, but we didn't have anyone who was good enough to put them away. The problem now is, like what you just said there, Steve, we're not even really creating the chances. I mean, look, I didn't actually, on the balance of play, did we deserve to get beat on Friday? Probably not.
But, I don't think we did, no.
Yeah, but like, that, in a way, that's almost worse, because... Sorry, Gav, go on.
The game...
Don't know if that recorded at all, Gareth, but I think we lost you again there. I think he was saying we deserved to win the game, maybe. I did think this as well. I thought, on one hand, a defeat feels harsh, but again, cliche coming out. We could have played all night and we wouldn't have scored.
No, we wouldn't. 100% we wouldn't. And I just, I don't know, like, I thought, I'm not one of these people who thinks that, like, sticking to a front makes you more attacking, but I did think Friday night was, like, the prime game to give that a go. Like, put him here on, fair enough, but put him on alongside Reuson. And Reuson is never going to be able to play up front on his own against decent sides. He doesn't have, like, the presence, really. So why don't we put someone alongside him and see how they go? I mean, opposition centre-halves must love playing against us. We must be the easiest team in the league for opposition centre-halves.
Especially when the defenders we've got available surely suggests that we should be playing three at the back of the minute anyway. Because again, Sealed, right, like, he looks okay. He does a job for you there. It reminds me of when John O'Shea used to play a full-back. He does a job for you, but you were losing an attacking option when he gets the ball, because he's just not going to drive. He's never going to beat a man. He's not going to drive forward or get in goal-scoring positions. Or, you know, you think about the way... Huggins in particular would maraud down that right-hand side, but even Hume to an extent. So you just think, if you're going to play him, play three centre-halves, and then you can get two up front by doing that. Go back to what we played that last season and did all right. That's just, the whole thing's a bit mad. But you know, I went back, so I wanted to bring up, you know, the fact the fans have turned on Bale so quickly, and what you've just said there, Chris, about the football, attacking football, regressing so quickly. Now, I think XG is fine to use as a guideline. I don't pin...
Yeah, yeah. I think
pin everything on it. I'm not Craig Clark. But it does give a good indication, doesn't it, of you know how many chances you create and how well you're playing. So then you think, well, would they say, well, you know, we just need to give it time because we were too open and this and that. And I thought I would go, because there's so much talk about the model. So I thought I would go back to when this was first brought up and this term was first brought up by Christian Speakman. And that was after the summer transfer window shut last season. So he spoke to Frankie and Danny on the club's official podcast. And it's definitely Christian Speakman who coins the term model. He does it multiple times in the interview. But actually, one interesting thing he said was that the model is driven by playing attacking football. Football that will get fans through the door. So again, backing themselves into a corner further, because they're actually saying the football is relevant. The attacking football is relevant. Let's go back to when Tony Mowbray was sacked, and the owner, not Speakman, actually said, the relentless demand for high performance culture is to be implemented throughout the club, and the development of a strong playing identity that UO supporters can be proud of. So similar to what we said and about them backing themselves in the corner when they just sacked Mowbray in the first place, because he was seventh and like 3 points off the playoffs a season after getting us into the playoffs. And to add further context, Speakman's comment, statement after Mowbray was sacked said, we remain loyal to our ambition and strategy. So that suggests they're not happy with where we were in the league table. So the two things there, us as fans yeah. can reasonably expect to be improved, is league position and style of football. They've both gone backwards. So I thought that was interesting. Can you believe how much they've backed themselves in the corner and all this? I've got more to share, but just get your reflection on that first.
I think they just say what suits, really. Like, last
but
year...
They're on record now.
No, that's
saying,
what I mean.
Saying that the style of football is important, it is part of the model. Yeah. They're on record of saying it.
Yeah, it's just bollocks, really. Also, like, they just say things. Like, Mowbray, they're saying, like, Mowbray got sacked because they want this high-performance culture, which is possibly one of the worst phrases ever devised in the English language. And, like, we all know that Mowbray got the sack because he started speaking out against, like, the parameters he was working under. Now, there's an argument that he knew what he got the job for, fine. But he wasn't sacked because of, like, the reasons, like, you've just articulated there, Steve. He was sacked because he fell out with them. Like, I mean, I think six games is too early to sack a manager. But if they were, like, if that was why they sacked Mowbray, Beale should be on pretty thin ice already, because we have
he's saying the same stuff as well, to be fair.
Yeah, and exactly. And it's like, well, I don't know. I think that the thing with the Mowbray thing is, and bringing Beale in, is if you're going to sack a guy, and like, I know, like, people have criticised the idea that everyone loved Mowbray. Not everyone loved him, but the vast majority, people respected him at the very least. And quite a lot of people did like him. And quite clearly, the playing squad liked him. We all know that. That all the noise from inside the squad was that they like him. Perhaps because he let the attacking players do what they wanted to do. I don't know. But the idea, if you're going to sack someone like that, you have to go and get someone who's a clear upgrade. And this guy just isn't. Like, I struggle to see how he turns this around. But even if he does improve, when they hired him, there was no way he was a clear upgrade. And all they've done, in a way, look, he doesn't help himself. But in a way, I do feel a bit sorry for him, because it's kind of like he's on a hide into nothing anyway. We've got then all of this other stuff that's gone on in the background around the derby and everything else, and the way the club treats supporters and the off the field stuff. And it's all, they basically managed to torpedo all of the goodwill that they had, which was quite a lot, in the space of 5 weeks. And it's basically like being a masterclass in how not to run a football club for the last 5 weeks.
Yeah, and I think the final thing that points towards just their contradictions on this as well is that we know how highly thought of Dodds is as well, as Mowbray and the club, and looking back, did a cracking job in the games he actually was interim manager for. So we knew that whoever was brought in was going to be told to work with the coaching staff that already existed, Dodds, Proctor, and I think fans were comfortable with that. Like, they are clearly a main driver behind this really good football that we've been watching, because they're the guys who are coaching the players how to do it. Mowbray was quite hands-off on the training ground. He decided that was the way he wanted to play. He would pass on his words of wisdom. He would set the tactics and stuff. But what you had with Michael Beale coming in was somebody who immediately told us all actually loved training, and it just didn't make sense to me that what they needed was to tweak the person at the top who would already take on board what the coaches were already doing. But then you've got a guy who seemingly wants to come in and just say, no, I'm going to lead all of the coaching now, which to me didn't seem like was what was needed. And the football, the change in what we're seeing on the pitch suggests he's changed it for the worse. It's just another contradiction to me. I'm confused. Gareth, have we got you back?
I'll switch your phone. Does this work better?
That sounds, yeah. It's not, yeah. You might have to boost your own audio. You might have to boost your audio when you're doing it at the end, but we're going to hear.
Got better. The funny thing for me is, I think, with the comments regarding Beale generally on, like, when we're talking about the fact he's been here for not very long, serving time or whatever. Like, touching on Chris's point, and the point that's been made many a time, is that if the idea is you're going to replace a manager with somebody better, it's not like we're 24th in the league, we've had to make a change, and we bring a manager in and you're expecting them to have a bit. It's going to take a bit of time because you're not performing well. The squad's obviously not as capable as it should be, and it's going to take time to turn that around. I don't think you should be afforded so much time to get your ideas across or whatever when you are 7th in the league. The whole point is, if somebody's being removed when you're 7th in the league, the person you're bringing in is going to be able to maintain and improve upon that. Like, initially maintain and then improve upon, which... And we haven't seen an improvement. It's on Twitter, it's like, or X, if you want to call them that. You know, we've gone, all the good things about this team have been eradicated, and all the bad things have been brought to the fore. It's like, you know, you said as well, like, you know, when you think about that Equity interview after the Southampton game, he's like, it's like, play with your mates. And we have gone, it's like the kids in the playground, the kids in detention. That's what it feels like. It's just like, they're not enjoying it. Look fed up. They don't look like they enjoy playing with each other anymore. Getting frustrated with each other a lot more frequently. It's just a bit of a mess, really. And it's all of our own creation. I was thinking, obviously on the back of the pod the other week, that Richard did, where they were kind of talking about Beale in Tesco. And I'm just thinking about it, like, has there ever been a time where a manager of someone you go into a massive supermarket and just be ignored? every manager who's been at Sunderland will always pass comment on the fact that whenever they go out, they'll have somebody come up to them to tell them what they should be doing, how they should be doing it better. If they were the manager, what they'd be doing, then wishing them luck for the game at the weekend, congratulating them on the result if they've got a positive result the week before, all that kind of stuff. That's somebody who can go in, wander around. The manager of the football club can go in, wander around, and go out with absolutely nobody like coming up to them and bothering them. And either says that nobody knows who the bloke is, or it says that nobody's particularly cares about what he's got to say. I think that's quite a significant thing when you talk about, you know, the city itself and what the football club is to the city, and the fact that
I think
that the manager of arguably the most important institution in the city and the main face of that institution can just go completely.
Yeah, unseen. I think it speaks to the ambition or lack of that's been shown. But look, I'm not gonna pretend that I knew loads about him before. I knew he wasn't very well liked at Rangers, and obviously we've all seen like what the reaction has been. But to me, they've hired him on a what? They've hired him on a 2.5 year deal, so that takes him up to the end of 2025-26. Now their stated aim is to get us promoted by the end of 2025-26. So that must mean they think this is the guy for the job. So I don't know. I mean, are they obviously, as you've talked about, Stephen, there's a lot of people who want him out already. I mean, are they going to ride the storm out, or is this just going to be one of those where, you know, we trundle to the end of the season and then you get sacked in the autumn like Mowbray did? We all sat here a year ago and said the likelihood is Mowbray will get sacked in the autumn if they don't speed up the plan, basically, if they don't invest in a squad that can challenge for automatic promotion. And sure enough, results dipped and he got the sack. I mean, is that, I think that's the issue. We're like, well, they talk about a long-term plan. Is it like a really long-term plan? Are they going to ride this out? Or is it actually just more of what we've seen over the last 10 years where it's a plan until enough people get pissed off and they go, oh, well, we'll get rid of him. I don't know. I think, Stephen, just when you were talking there, an interesting point, which I think has gone under the radar, is with the backroom staff thing. Obviously, they promoted Dodds. So effectively, what they've done is they've kind of cut costs in like the staffing, because we've got, who was it? Was it Mark Venus? Was Mowbray's guy?
And obviously, I'm not sure what he did, to be fair, but he was Mowbray's number two. I did often wonder what he was doing, to be fair.
Yeah, but they've cut a role, basically, haven't they? And it's like, is that what all this? I mean,
but the irony in that is that the Dodds has been given this promotion in inverted commas,
yeah,
but his level of autonomy has probably been reduced.
Yeah,
that's what weird. I'm saying, because Beale is such a
trainer. Do you not think it's weird as well? Do you not think it's weird as well, though? Like, kind of forcing that backroom team on a new manager. Like, I guess that's maybe
if it's working, the annoying thing, isn't it? If it's working and you're playing in a certain way, and then you just, that's what I'm saying, and somebody like Mowbray just tweaks things and decisions, I get that. I really get it, especially when we were generally playing well. There's been a bit of revisionism around Tony Mowbray and how popular he was with certain fans, because a lot of people say, let's not rewrite history and we wanted him out. And like, I'm sorry, but I never heard any chance for him to be sacked. As far as I'm aware, none of the other podcasts went against him. None of the fans, I can't remember anybody turning on him. We didn't even get to do our manager poll on him, which is disappointing. Because I look forward to it.
Bad enough. Yeah, I think it's mostly like people online who oscillate between everything's amazing and everything's terrible. I think they've been mostly the people. Don't get us wrong, there were some match going people who wanted rid of Mowbray, but I think there was, a lot of it was just a bit of noise, really. I agree with you. It's certainly out of the last, obviously Alex Neil's like an outlier in that, because he left rather than we got rid. But yeah, out of the last, as many managers as I can remember, Mowbray was under the least pressure from the fan base. For as long as I can remember, really.
People keep on saying, like, I've read it well. What about the Huddersfield game? Yeah, we're crapping Huddersfield game. It was a terrible game. But it's like, oh, well, always, that game was rubbish, so we should sack him. Right, okay, fair enough. Now we bring this guy in who's put in, the performance of the team's put in has been, like the vast majority of the performance has been on a level of the Huddersfield game. And then, you know, it just, there's honestly, how I feel at the moment, we're basically the whole pattern until he's gone. Because we're not going to get promoted under this guy. right? Or we're not going to get, I don't, we're not going to make the playoffs under this guy. And it's going to, it would, it kind of just feels like we're in like a period where it's just going to be, we're going to chug along until he gets sacked and then we'll start again.
And the only way you would think
how long,
like
how long is this going to go on for? And this how we know how in we know how catching apathy is. We've seen it. We saw it in that. I'm not comparing it to the championship relegation season, but you can see how quickly apathy can spread, and when people get disillusioned and apathetic, you know, the biggest asset to the owners of this football club and supporters financially, they might not care about us from an emotional perspective. But they need us from a money perspective. And if that starts to dissipate, then what's their point of motivation? I don't even know what the point of motivation is. I don't understand why people leap to the difference of billionaires on the internet or wherever.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's interesting is like the only way they because the style of football has changed that much. Not changed that much, but It's not the same front foot football it was. Keeping possession is not the same thing. So because it's changed so much, the only way you could then get behind that as like an owner or somebody who makes these calls is to then go and let him do what he wants in the transfer market to put his own stamp on the team, and they're not going to do that. And by the way, I'm not condoning that they should do that because he is. He is not somebody I would want to have that kind of power and control anyway. So again, like all of these things we're talking about, just confuses you as to why this thought this man was the right one, because they aren't going to do that. So what he's left with now is no, we're going to continue to buy this style of player, and he obviously doesn't have the same idea that the Mowbray had, and Mowbray's ideas worked better with his squad than his does. So the, again, they couldn't have backed themselves any more in a corner if they tried. It's unbelievable.
I think part of the reason they've hired them, and I'm going to come across significantly older than my years here, but it's a bit like Lee Johnson. Like, it's just like this kind of management speak bollocks that they come out with. Like I've said it before, but if these people weren't in football, they'd be middle manager at a call center. And they just, like, I'm sorry, like it just feels like that's kind of the kind of people they go for. Like, let's be honest, Speakman is one of them. I don't want to get into whether he's done a good, bad, indifferent job or anything, but he comes out, I can't listen to him speak because it's just a lot of hot air. And Beale sounds like, I mean, you've all seen him, like, putting Instagram stories of the latest management book he's reading and all this crap, and I don't care about that. Like, just go and win some football games. That's all I'm bothered about. Lee Johnson was the same. I mean, Lee Johnson's now running courses for people to join him. I mean, that'll be a hoot. But yeah, I think that's why. And I think like he speaks their language, but these people are very, I don't know, they're like so far up their own ass. Like I just, they seem to think, and this isn't a, you know how you get the cliche about like, you need to talk in like working to working class men and women in Sunderland and stuff like that in the Northeast. It's not that. It's just that most of the time, the people who go on like this are covering for the fact that they're just bluffers. And unfortunately, like I say, 6 games, not long enough, really. But unfortunately, he's doing nothing to disprove that. But I do think your point about the transfer window is really fair, because I think in slight mitigation, obviously things have definitely worsened, both subjectively and objectively. But I think quite a few of the players are knackered. Like, I look at, like, Ekwa looks, he's been very poor recently, but he also looks shattered. Like, Daniel has been excellent. He must be shattered. Like, with Bellingham. I mean, we do with Bellingham what we did with Callum Doyle. And I've rarely seen it be more obvious that a player needs a bit of a rest. And still he's not getting one, which is ridiculous. And then, like you say, Steve, I mean, we haven't done, we're 22 days into January, and you get all these people going, oh, business happens late in January. Well, it doesn't. It doesn't have to happen late in January. For example, we signed Trent Hume on the 4th of January. So it doesn't have to happen late. It's usually, there's usually a reason behind it. And usually it's either you haven't planned very well, or you don't have any money, and you're waiting for a loan to come in. So, we saw it last January. There was no, we all sat here and said, you know what? There's an opportunity here. We're in a weak league. There's an opportunity here that if they put someone into the squad, we might get promoted. And they didn't do it. Now, this year, you could argue that there's less point in spending any money this January than last, because the likelihood of us getting promoted this year is pretty minimal now, I would say. But I just, you don't get the vibe that there's any urgency about it. And I think the concern is that the last transfer window now looks pretty awful. There's only one player who's playing regularly, and we've ridden him into the ground. All the rest of them have barely kicked a ball. And so for all we've all, despite the fact what some people say about this podcast, we've all praised the recruitment over the last couple of years. But actually, the summer, there's very little to praise, to be honest. I don't know if you two agree with that.
Yeah, no, I definitely do. And it's interesting because, again, listening back to this, Speakman talk about the model, he was saying that they plan 12 to 24 months in advance, and they want players who they think can perform to a level higher than the club are already playing at. So that means last summer, playoff semi-finalists, you're looking at a player that can come straight in the team, not one who needs a lot of work, a lot of development. And because they're not good enough, frankly, aren't going to get the game time to develop like you would want them to. I wanted to read out some extra things here when he was talking about the model, just see what people think about this. So I mentioned that it's driven by playing attacking football, football to get fans through the door, off the feet. This is interesting. Quoting them here, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but I wrote the notes down when I was listening. We cannot underestimate the value of Luke O'Neill, Danny Bart, Lyndon Gooch, and Corey Evans to this group of players. And then went on to speak about how, yes, you want a core group of young players, but actually you need those experienced players to get them through, which I can't remember him saying that. So I was quite surprised when I heard it. Two of those players have let leave now. Pritchard, he name dropped, he mentioned as well in that. So two have left. One seems like they've been trying to get rid of since the summer. So that, again, now he's on record actually saying that those players are important. So if you're letting all those players go, they need replacing. The player recruitment was generally getting a balance between player development and performance. So, you know, interesting as well. And then this bit on the selling. So there'll be times when a player might outgross, and that's natural. And sometimes you have to see the value in selling a player. That's normal, as long as you then reinvest that money back into the team. So again, this is him bullet pointing the model for us. So that's going to be the next question, isn't it? About,
I'll tell you what's going to happen.
Gooch is gone. Stewart's gone. Lahadji, they brought a fee. They actually went on record after Lahadji sold, said this will give us more adaptability in the transfer market or whatever it is. This was before Stewart was sold. So they've put themselves under pressure again. They're going to have to reinvest this money like they've told us they will.
Well, I think my sort of feeling on what's going to happen, they'll probably sell Pritchard and then say, well, we've got a deal, Ashish. We need to give him an opportunity. They won't sign a striker, and they'll say we need to give the strikers that we bought the opportunity to maximum maturation during their early period at the club or something. It'll be some bollocks like that, I would say. And everyone will just be like, all right, okay, thanks, yeah, great. And that's what will happen, and then we'll move on to the next bit. We'll probably sign a player we don't need in an area we don't need. We'll probably sign a fullback or something. Yeah, I know we've got injuries or whatever at the moment. But
I was going to say, we could do with a left-back, to be fair.
Yeah, but we've still got Pembele, Hugin player there. Seals have been playing there, or Nine should be able to play there. I'm just saying, we need desperately a defensive midfielder. We desperately need a striker with who is ready to go. And if they fail to do that yet again, I don't understand how any. I mean, in the summer, Scott Sloan was saying the squad's weak. It was like, oh, how can you possibly say the squad's weak? Well, we sold our top scorer and our player of the season and didn't replace him like with anyone near qualified to fill their boots. So how can anybody possibly say we lost Amad? I mean, that made us laugh in the week when I read Michael Beale's comments on Amad saying, well, you know, he's an excellent player, but like, is that the kind of player we need at the moment? What, the best player in the league? You don't want the best player in your league on your team.
Yeah, but that's just him. That's him just admitting that we're not going to have him. That we're not going to get him.
Do you know what I mean? No, it's like...
Yeah, yeah.
Why, what kind of mentality drives you to the point where you don't... You're actively trying to sell one of your wingers. One of your other wingers who hasn't had an assist or a goal all season is out injured for 5 weeks. You're playing a player who you signed as a centre midfielder and has played as a number 10, a striker, a left winger, and a right winger on the right wing now because that's very players. And you've put you to the best player in the league. I'm sure if we'd ever want the best player in the league in our team because it's not, it's obviously they know better. That's a good idea to not have the best player in the league in the team. And I'll be explained as to why it's a good idea. Because we need to give a bar more game. Probably. So he can get good enough so he can sell him, probably. I don't know. I'm just very cynical about this.
I just think,
laughable.
I know you said there that like they would say this stuff and people will accept it. I'm not sure that's the case anymore.
I mean,
at the minute, they are under so much pressure from the fan base. Letting Alex Pritchard leave and not replacing him with somebody else would be, I mean, talk about a nail hovering over a coffin. I mean, Jesus.
But that would, I mean, to be honest, Steve, like, that would probably confirm what I'm about to say, that is increasingly my theory, which probably won't surprise people. But yeah, that you said you were surprised that Speakman actually came out and said that about the experienced players. I was surprised when you were relaying that there, because to me, that suggests that actually the reason they do what they're doing is just money driven. Like, it isn't, they're not looking at building a team. They're basically going, right, well, these guys are older, they're on a bit more money, we're going to get rid of them. Like, either the strategy's completely changed in the year since Speakman said, which I don't believe is the case. So to me, it just smacks of being money driven, which would explain. Wooden does explain a lot of what's going on around the club at the minute. We all said it. Sustainability. I know Gareth doesn't agree on this, but like, I have, in and of itself, I don't have a great problem with sustainability. Like, if it's feasible, but it could also be a byword for being cheap about it. And increasingly, it looks like that's what we're doing. I mean,
I'm not against sustainability, but what? Why buy a football club if you want to run it like...
No, I fully agree.
What's the point? Well, this is fun. Business, it's like playing like business manager or something on like a computer. What's the point? Like, how fun is this? Do you know what I mean?
But I think like what Steve was saying there about like kind of the reinvestment thing. We're already seeing people go, oh, well, actually, they spent the Stuart money before we sold them. I'm like,
it's winding me up that.
Even if that was true, then you would have to either believe that we didn't have a transfer budget for the summer
at all,
because what was it at all, or that we had to sell Stuart, or we were in some sort of financial difficulty because like all the money's already been spent. We need to get it back. And to me, it's just an excuse for not spending any money. Like don't get me wrong, they have spent some money on some fees, but they're not. I mean, and the other point is that really, like, what they've spent the money on hasn't been ready to go now. Like, we've got four strikers there who I reckon at a push, three strikers, we'll leave Burst around because he's alone. You got three strikers who at a push might have cost around 4 million combined. I think it's a little bit less, but let's say it was 4 million. we're getting nothing out of that. We've got one goal in 28 games or something so far for that. Would we not have been better spending that on one player who's a bit more ready to go?
Yep. 100%. 100%. This is where it gets mixed up. This is where it gets mixed up at times, isn't it? Like,
why do people get so protective about other, like, a billionaire's money? Why? Like, why are you bothered? Why are you bothered about Kieran Louis-Dreyfus's money? Who cares?
Well, he's not bothered about you, so I don't know why anyone would
be bothered about him. Why are you bothered about? Why are you bothered about? Oh, well, you better not spend any money. Uh-oh. You only have 3 billion left if he spends a billion. Like, I'm not calling for that, but you know what I mean? It's like, why do you care? These people have got more money. Like, at 26, Kieran Louis-Dreyfus have more money than, like, probably about half of the crowd at Sunderland will ever earn in a lifetime. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, and people are like, oh, should look after that, mate. If you don't want to spend any money, and I'm not saying we should be spending like 50, 60, 70 billion pounds on players and all that. If you're gonna run a football club, you should be the expert. Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't expect to have to invest with your own money, because otherwise there's no point buying one. Don't bother.
It just suggests I want to put it on a certain level so it can be sold. That would be the only rationale for it.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a million miles from where my thinking is now. Because, I mean, the sustainability thing, it doesn't add up, because if you were trying to be sustainable, you wouldn't have what's going on off the field. A sustainable club does not make it difficult for its supporters to spend money on it. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And I think the thing is as well, it's a bit of a false economy because, like, okay, the idea apparently is, like, let's stay in this league for a bit and build up. But if you look at clubs that are in this league, they all lose an absolute fortune. And, like, unfortunately, the longer you stay in this league, the less money you're going to get from the gate, because people aren't going to stick it. We're already seeing the gate drop. Like, people laughed audibly on Friday night when Rory read the attendance out because they pissed people off. And people, like, they forget that, like, and some people who comment online and stuff forget that, like, people got long memories and people have seen this before. Like, we were all there, like, back in, like, under McCarthy when the average gate was, like, 24,000 and that. And do you know what I mean? So people have seen this before and people will just not go. But they seem not to have realised that that's something that could potentially happen. The other thing as well is that, like, as much as, yeah, look, we have some, like, saleable assets in the squad, they're not going to be worth an absolute fortune if the team just plods around mid-table in the championship for years on end. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but we saw 2 weeks ago what the gulf was between where we are and where near the top of the Premier League is. It just, I get it, and it's a hard one because I'm not arguing that they should go and, like, spend an absolute, like what you were saying there, Gareth, I'm not arguing that they should go spend an absolute fortune, because we have seen in the past what happens when you do that and get it wrong. But I just think, unfortunately, people seem to come down on the side of, if you're not all in on the sustainability thing, you're all in on spending recklessly. Yeah. Then there can be a middle ground. Like, eventually they're going to have to, like,
If you don't spend anything, I'm just saying, like, we don't spend anything. If you want to, like, people want to harp back to, like, bad things that have happened, you know, when you're signing Mark Wilson, Callum McManaman, and whoever else it was on transfer deadline day, and then you get relegated because you don't want to spend money anymore. Yeah, spending money, but spending money badly got us in opposition. Well, getting those players on the free didn't really do us any good either, did it? So it works both ways. It just, said before, if the recruitment team's supposed to be as amazing as they are, and give them more money, than will find it plays on the level of that price. And then you don't have anything to worry about there. The risk is actually lower in spending the money than taking a chance on an unproven talent that may not have any return on your investment. So I would just, it's all a load of bollocks. The stuff that they say to people about this whole thing, it's just it gets on my nerves, because I hate it when people take the piss out of it and sit there and tell you something, and it's like gaslighting behaviour, basically.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting I think, because obviously we're all eagerly awaiting the minutes from this Red and White Army meeting last, what was it, Thursday night. Now, I would bet that if they get drawn on the subject of obviously what happened with the Newcastle game, that they're going to say it wasn't financially oriented, in which case you have to ask, why on earth did they do it? I know I'm kind of putting an argument in the mouth there, but I can imagine that's probably what they're going to say, because it was clearly financially oriented. But then we're going full circle, really, because, like, okay, so we fleeced them for like 600 quid a ticket in the Black Cat's bar and whatever else, but we're still not spending money. So what was all that about? Like, I'm not saying that they're like siphoning money off, but yet when people are asked to stomach these things and put up with these things, like, you know, the season tickets got put up without a lot of people getting told and stuff like that, I think you're well within your rights to say, well, okay, but where's it going? Especially when, like you said, Stephen, they've said they're going to reinvest. And now, let's be fair, the club aren't making this argument, but some people are saying, oh, no, they've already spent that money. Well, no, that's not what we've been told. We've been told that if they sell someone, it's going to get reinvested. So is it just because it's January? Are they going to spend in the summer? I don't know, but they just, it feels like they've...
Saying, oh, well, now is not the time to ask questions in the meeting about transfers because we're in January. Like, well, how often do you get the owner of the club in the room to ask them a question? Like, you don't. So you ask them the question when they're in the room, because if you get to meet them in July next year, well, we don't ask them about the summer window, because it's in the summer now. There's nothing to do about lasting before January. It's not about January or the summer. It's just about the whole strategy overall. And if it's as good as it's purported to be, then, you know, there should be no excuse for the fact that we're a week away from the end of the transfer window and we're just nowhere near signing anybody, really.
Well,
especially in the areas that we're... Sorry, because I keep interrupting you.
Let's see what happens on that. But I mean, you know, I think just to round things off there, just everything we've said is on record now about this model, style of football. The statements after Mowbray was sacked to say that they expected improvement from seventh and that they would reinvest any sales back on the side. All that stuff's on record as being what the model is. So it's failing at the moment and it might improve. Look, hopefully it does. So
let's be fair, a lot of people have supported that as well. Like, a lot of people are all in on this on the basis that the money does get reinvested. So, you know, like, I would like to think that if it isn't, then we start to see people who are all in on it saying, well, hang on, what's going on here? Like I say, it might not be the best time to discuss it because it's January and, yeah, there's an argument that the season's pretty much not gone, but, you know, that it would be a waste of money right now. But I do think, I don't know, they just go by what we said before. It feels like they say things when they're convenient and then the actions often don't follow.
We're paying away. We renewed the contract of a player. It was not played.
Baffling. Yeah. Like, a nice thing to do, but if everything's about money, why do we do it? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I like Corey Evans, but, like, come on. Like, when's he going to be back? April.
I'm not sure he'll kick a ball for us again.
Just bizarre. I mean, I hope he's all right and all that comes back into the team, back the squad, available, all that. But like you say, it just kind of appears to just be happening.
Indeed. Right. Matt will be back later on in the week to look ahead to the Stoke game. At least Alex Neil is not the manager. That's one thing we're going to all... be happy about, because potential to really have your noses rubbed in it there. Right, okay. As always, thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.